Are we free to proceed? Many years ago, I had a friend, a fellow teacher, and we became pretty good buddies. We went to a lot of basketball games together, and even back when I was young, played some basketball together on Sunday nights. But he invited me over to his house one evening. He had just fairly recently gotten this new, I think it was an electronic game, which, you know, this would have been back in the early 80s, so they wouldn't have been nearly as advanced as they are now, but I can't even remember whether it was a simulation of basketball or baseball. But anyway, he invited me over to play this game, and what I hadn't expected was that his three school-aged children would be there to watch. No, more accurately, they were there to cheer on the home team. And to their joy, Dad proceeded to annihilate me in their presence. And I quickly realized that I had been had. And it was very clear that I was the chosen opponent who would make his masterful game skills obvious for his adoring fans. It's pretty easy to look good when you get to choose your own reference group. You know, I grew up thinking I was short because I played basketball and I had two older brothers. It wasn't until I quit playing basketball that I realized I'm actually average sized. You're either tall or short because of who you're standing next to. You're either rich or poor depending on who you're comparing yourself to. And this Pharisee in the story this morning certainly was choosing his own reference group. Someone with whom he knew he would compare quite well. As a matter of fact, he chooses someone to contrast himself with. Someone about whom he can say how different I am from this despicable guy. And a tax collector was very easy to despise. In that society, if you wanted to choose somebody to look down upon and to have scorn for, you couldn't do better than a tax collector, because they weren't just some guy that works at H&R Block or something and helps you prepare your taxes. These were people who had sold themselves out to the Roman authorities, these oppressors who were now occupying and so harshly ruling their land. They were turncoats, they were traitors, and they sort of used their intimate knowledge with the local people then to exploit them. They were what one commentator called the worst kind of criminal, a legal one. So no wonder everybody sees this guy as a despicable, immoral traitor. He plays the role of somebody to look down on. And it was no contest. It was sort of like having an arm wrestling match with your kid sister. Not that I ever did that. You know, in some sense, the Pharisee does have a point, sort of, when he thanks God that he's not like this other guy. He's not a lying cheat who has betrayed his country. Between the two, he's the one that most of us would prefer to move into the neighborhood. Maybe we're all a little bit like that when we think about ourselves. We are prone to choose our own reference group so that we can see ourselves in a favorable light. We emphasize the ways that I'm not like, you fill in the blank. At least I'm not one of those. Compared to them, I look pretty impressive. Just like he did in the passage we looked at together last week, Luke tells us up front why Jesus is telling this story. Jesus was telling a parable to certain people who had convinced themselves that they were righteous and who looked down on everyone else with disgust. Now, What I'm convinced that we should not do with this story is to assume that it is the Pharisees' goodness that is the problem. God is always on the side of what's good. God is always encouraging goodness in the whole creation that He, when He had completed it, said, it is very good. God is in the business of goodness. We don't want to get that wrong. He's always for what's moral, what's righteous, what's just. The problem is that the Pharisee is not being real. He makes the deluded assumption about himself. He believes his own self-justifying words. God, I thank you that I'm not like everyone else. He's deluded about himself, and he's also then deluded about God. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of everything I own back to God. In other words, God, see how much better I do than most other people. Especially this despicable guy. He seems to somehow conclude that it's all about scoring points. And it's about actually scoring more points than the other guy, than someone else. I came across this when I was researching this week. I thought it was pretty interesting. If you're like most people, you're way above average at almost everything. Psychologists call this the state of illusory superiority. It's also called the Lake Wobegon effect, from Garrison Keillor's stories about Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average. It simply means that we tend to inflate our positive qualities and abilities, especially in comparison to other people. Numerous research studies have revealed this tendency to overestimate ourselves. For instance, when researchers asked 1 million high school students how well they got along with their peers, none of the students rated themselves below average. As a matter of fact, 60% of students believed they were in the top 10%. 25% rated themselves in the top 1%. And you think college professors would do a lot better at this, right? They were just as biased about their own abilities. 2% rated themselves below average. 10% were average, and 63% were above average. While 25% rated themselves as truly exceptional. Well, I thank God that I'm not like any of those people. One researcher summed up the data this way. He says it's a great contradiction. The average person believes he is a better person than the average person. A Christian psychologist by the name of Mark McMinn contends that the Lake Wobegon effect actually reveals our pride. He writes that one of the clearest conclusions of social science research is that we are proud. We think better of ourselves than we really are. We see our faults in faint black and white rather than in vivid color, and we assume the worst in others while assuming the best in ourselves. In other words, there's a budding Pharisee inside of most of us. The problem is unreal pride. And the result is self-justification. Jesus sees right through the Pharisee in you and me as well. He points to the tax collector as the one who's offering the prayer that actually leads to being set right with God. David had it right in Psalm 51 when he says, "A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." Because it's the prayer about a person who gets real about their inability to justify themselves. And then gets real about God, the God of love, the God of mercy. No more delusions about themselves or other people or about God. So another thing we might mistakenly do then is to assume that God prefers tax collectors to good people. People who are on the wrong side of goodness, who have scored no points. No, when we depend entirely on our own scoring average, we probably don't prefer God. It's not that God doesn't prefer those people. It's that those people are less likely to prefer God, the kind of God we actually have. What God prefers is people who are real. And that's why the tax collector went home justified, set right. He told the truth about himself. And surely goodness at least begins with the truth, doesn't it? And he told the truth about God. Have mercy on me. Mercy is the truth about God. It's getting real about God. And mercy is precisely then what he received. He was justified. Justified in the Bible is a legal term. Its opposite is condemnation. He went home without condemnation. So if we want to practice a scorekeeping religion, one that says I'm good to the extent that I'm chalking up points, and I'm especially good if I can annihilate my opponents, I'm God's MVP. God, you couldn't win without me. You owe me, God. How unreal can you get? Jesus makes it clear how much we owe. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. How much do we owe God? Everything. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. So much for a scorekeeping religion. You still want to practice that? It actually becomes a way of keeping God at a distance. No wonder it says that this Pharisee stood by himself and then said these words. Because these are words that disconnect you from real people. They're words that disconnect you from the real God. And they actually disconnect us from the real person inside that we are. Jesus was telling a parable to certain people who had convinced themselves that they were righteous and who looked on everyone else with disgust. It's a humbling experience to know my need for grace. I get real when I focus on God's goodness and see my need for grace. And I am unreal when I compare myself to other people in order to look good or feel good about me. When I don't want anything to do with grace, that's a sure sign that I really don't want anything to do with the God that Jesus shows us. And so the get real prayer for both of these guys and for all of us is, Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner. Amen.